Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
And welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is one quarter of one of the most successful bands of the noughties, who's stepping up and trading in his guitar for a while for a frying pan on this year's Celebrity MasterChef. Born and raised in Bolton, he was a Bruce Springsteen obsessed teenager when he met fellow guitarist Tom Fletcher at a frankly disastrous audition for a boy band that he ended up at by mistake. They became fast friends, and after filling out their foursome with drummer Harry Judd and bass player Dougie Pointer via an ad in the NME, McFly was formed, and they fast became the youngest band ever to have had an album debut at number one, a record they swiped from the Beatles. Seven UK number one singles later, after several sold-out tours and even a few movie appearances over in the States, the boys pressed pause in 2015 and went their separate ways. Our man turned to solo work, took on an exciting role as a judge on The Voice Kids, and even got closer to his other first love, football, playing semi-pro. But we all knew they couldn't stay apart forever, and McFly were soon back in action. First, as part of supergroup McBusted, before dropping back into their classic four-piece, releasing a brand new album in 2020, and get this, playing their first ever Glastonbury this year, where they proved to be so popular, they closed down an entire field. Mic drop moment or what? Danny Jones is in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
I learned a bit about myself there. That was
Did
a great
you?
Intro.
Is it?
Yeah, totally forgot about that audition that I met Tom at. That was amazing. Well, that was one of the best moments of my life.
You printed off the information, the second page hadn't printed, and on the second page it said no guitarists.
Well, what it was a stage newspaper.
Ah.
And the stage newspaper print was off, like day. So it looked like it was. The boys ripped me. They were like, no, it wasn't. You wanted to come and dance in a boy band, didn't you? I was like, no, honestly, I swear it said looking for guitarists. I thought that, but it said obviously not, no guitarists, whatever.
So when you got there, it was a load of Muscle Marys kind of, you know, popping their abs, trying to limber up to do their dance routines because they were looking for an all singing, all dancing, backflipping boy band group.
Yeah, basically, I turn up there and there's a queue. No one's got a guitar, and it's a cold, wintry, grey day. And I'm like, Mum, this is what am I doing here?
I love
and
that your mum took you.
Yeah, I'm fresh. I'm fresh out of college. No, I was fresh in my. What was I? Just about to go to college. Literally thinking I was Liam Gallagher. Like, I had the Parker on. I had the long hair down the sides over my ears. You know, the Paul Weller haircut. You know.
You really did, didn't you?
Oh, I loved it. And it was, you know. My mum was like, look, it's Universal Music. Just as long as she wanted me, she was like my manager. She's like, just get in front of them and play for them. So it just shows, you know, like you just got to just do things and get in front of people. And this was one of those examples of like Tom seeing me and just going, mate, you're not right for this boy band. Because I had to dance. I had to dance for 15.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
You did the dance.
It was a room like this that we're in now. There was a panel. And there was the management that Tom was signed to. Tom was filming, holding one of the cameras.
So Tom was there working for a bit of cash on the side. He'd been signed as a songwriter to them.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So he'd been signed as a songwriter, filming this audition that I turned up to, looking like I've just come out of an Oasis cover band. And and there's a guy in a tracksuit next to me doing the... And oh, that's what happened. I came into the room, they were like, right, okay... just find a space on the floor. We're going to play some music and we're going to show, and you got to show us what you can do dance-wise, you know, your dance moves. And my mum, literally, I remember in the corner, laughing her head off. And there was this, you know, I'm stood there going, they've played this music and I've gone like, you know, like this, like looking around. And the guy next to me is going, all this kind of stuff. Honestly, my mum was on the floor. So yeah, that video exists somewhere, believe it or not.
Well, I saw footage of you arriving for the audition and you've got big Richard Ashcroft sunglasses on. The hair is totally Gallagher.
Yeah.
You've got an anorak on and you've got the shuffle.
Walk.
The shuffle. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. One of the first songs I showed Tom, I played him Bittersweet Symphony and I played him Mr. Writer by Stereophonics. And then they were like, oh, it's really good. You know, it's really good. But do you know any pop? And I said, oh, Paul Weller. And everyone laughed. Because to me, that's what pop was, like a popular person. Yeah. I didn't know what pop was. And he took me to one side down the corridor. I was like, look, there's a Backstreet Boys song. You know, tell me why ain't nothing but a heart. I was like, mate, what is that? That's amazing. Come on.
Did you not listen to the Backstreet Boys?
No, I remember my sister having posters on the wall of Brian. You know, from the Backstreet Boys, whatever. And
Brian.
Never really like, never really like taking it in because I was just in my own world, you know. But yeah, honestly, that day I was just like, okay, 3-minute pop songs are like, you know, quite addictive. Yeah.
Well, this all takes me beautifully straight into my first question for you, which sits around that fateful day and destiny. Are you ready?
Yes.
We've covered the fact that you and Tom were kind of thrown together in the most auspicious of circumstances. He literally could see that you were the proverbial fish out of water as you did your dad dancing.
Yes.
And cited Paul Weller as pop. But he has since said that from that moment, because he was there covering it for the management company, mm-hmm. who were trying to figure out what to do with him, right? They recognised that he had something, but they didn't quite know what to put with him or around him. And then he met you and he said it was destiny. It was meant to be. That the moment you two came together for him, that was it. You just clicked and everything made sense. And I wondered, A, if that was the same for you, and B, if you could talk me through when else destiny has intervened and crossed your path.
Wow. The energy was amazing. Like, you know, we were so different and we were probably never met in any other world. But so my idol was Bruce Springsteen and his was Bryan Adams. And one of the first things we had, and because I lived with his parents for quite a while.
Did you?
Yeah. I'll never forget. They had this most amazing cereal. And we used to get up in the morning. It was like Sainsbury's own chocolate curl crunch or something, and we used to pair it with some grapefruit cordial or something. Really weird, right?
I love that. What you say pair it, you can tell you're in the middle of the MasterChef experience, can't you? We'd pair it with
Hey, where to see where it's got to now.
Did it come with a jus or a foam?
But it was incredible, and I'll never forget that summer I spent down there, and he had a video of him as a kid on a chair singing Bryan Adams, and I had the identical video of me doing it to Springsteen. And we were like, mate, like we're literally, you're the Southern version of me. But obviously he was massively into his musical theater, and I was obviously into my blues. I was massively into blues at the time, and I grew up on blues music and Springsteen and Tubular Bells and all that.
Which are really quite odd musical references for a kid of your age at that time. It's not, you know, you would have had to seek that music out. It wasn't what everybody else at school was listening to, for sure.
No, it was. Do you know what? I felt quite proud of my musical background knowledge and what I knew. Because at the time, my uncle was a guitarist and he lived in Ireland, and he used to take me out around all the pubs and my mum and that. And my mum was a real kind of like, you know, she was pro, like, support the local open mic nights and we're going to do it. And there was this one place where we used to go. It was called the Busker's Ball. And for me, as a teenager who was dying to play anywhere I could, that gave me the confidence, because at school, music wasn't really a strong subject. Like, for me it was, but like, in terms of they didn't put any, you know, money into it at all.
No.
You know, there was a class, I think four of us took music, and my music teacher didn't even know I play guitar. You know, that's how much they cared for it, you know. So
wow.
It was a bit of a disappointment. So luckily I had the private guitar lessons, you know, thank you know, my mum for that. But that gave me the confidence. I felt like I was this, like, I don't know, I was in my own world with, like, playing, and this open mic night gave me the confidence to sing at such a young age in a pub at like 11 p.m. at night. Obviously, I was always waking up at, you know, the next morning for school a bit like, I'm so tired, Mom. But she knew she was doing the
cross-eyed.
Right thing, you know. Yeah.
But what a great training ground for, I mean, she could obviously tell that you had something, but it must have felt like a relief, or sweet relief, to meet somebody like Tom who shared some of those musical sensibilities and got you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just going back to your other point about destiny and that. It's like, later on in life, and I feel like I had this naturally in a weird way. I've never tried to connect the dots in the future. I've always just gone with it. If it feels right, if it feels fun, just go for it. And then you go back and go, oh, that happened because of that.
Mm.
That's why I met him. Oh, that, okay, yeah, there we go.
Because life often, well, you're busy making plans, life kind of intervenes and gets
totally
in the way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at what it did for you. So when you talk about destiny, even those kind of late nights as a school kid playing those open mic nights, there was something predestined around that, because look at where it took you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It would have, I always say this as well, like, to kids on The Voice Kids, I'm like, if one teacher would have said to me, look, English, because I was staring out the window at English. You know, I was staring out the window going, I don't want to read this book. I want to go and play guitar. I want to go and write music. If one teacher, like in maths, I was staring out the window. In science, I was staring out the window. And if a teacher just said to me, look, English, you're going to be writing poetry pretty much every day. So in your head, if you think about how you want to do that, you might take in what we're doing today in the class. Science, they might say to me, oh, I know this might not make sense now, but one day, if you want to be a music producer, you're going to have to understand wave forms, hertz, all this. And if a maths teacher said to me, look, man, if you want to build a studio, you're going to have to understand calculations of how sound travels and all this. That would have blown my mind. I'd have been like, oh, yeah, of course. Instead, it was just the standard. And, you know, it's those things that make, I think, a bit of a difference to kids, is just getting their imagination going.
Totally.
To what they want to be, instead of just forcing it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's really salient, what you've just raised there, by way of like bringing it to life and making it something that kids want to work at.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do you want to be? If they don't know, that's okay. But try and make something, if you want to be, I don't know, a musician in English, I'd go, okay, well, you're going to want to write poetry, so why don't we get you involved in the rhythms and, you know, and all this. And
wordplay.
Yeah, just wordplay, and it'll just ignite that in them, I think, you know, earlier. Whereas I had to learn all that a bit later on.
On your own steam as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I had that. Luckily, I had that in me. I didn't give up and I went for it, and I really got my head down, and because I loved it. And I always remember, I think my mum or someone said to me, that if you're good at anything, it might have been my granddad, he said, there's always an audience for a master.
Ah.
And if you master something, no matter what it is, how big, how small, you know, there's an audience. Someone will like what you do.
Ah.
And I was like, that's big.
That's a
pearl. That's
a lovely little pearl of wisdom,
yeah.
There, isn't it?
Yeah. And they always stick in my head, those little things.
What about outside of music? When else has destiny played a hand? I mean, how did you and your wife end up coming together?
Kind of the same. Yeah, destiny in a weird way. Like,
really?
that energy of like, yeah, I see so many friends overthink certain situations, especially relationships. But like, I remember me and my wife, we met in this club in the daytime, which was like a Miss London event, because she was an ex-Miss England, and she was presenting it.
Right.
And she didn't like me.
She didn't?
Because I was heckling in the corner.
Why were you heckling?
because I was just showing off with my mate.
How old are you?
21, 22.
Okay, so this is, okay, you're young, you're a young guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Young guy.
Had a couple of beers?
In a band, well, it was the daytime. I think we might have started, yeah. Maybe like 3 p.m. or something like that.
So you heckled your wife.
I was meant to be down there to judge the event.
Right.
Or something. Yeah, she was like, who is this idiot who's just like, what does he think? Who does he think he is, you know? And I'm obviously like obsessed already by Georgia. And then...
The moment you saw her, did she turn your head?
Yeah, she just had this like energy, smile.
Beautiful smile.
Aura. Yeah, just like, I want to be a part of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's quite nice. And we ended up not liking each other actually, because I thought she was going to be like an ex or whatever I had. I was like, oh, it's in the same kind of, you know,
vein,
same world and all that. I was like, okay. So we got talking. She's like, oh, you're Northern. I was like, yeah, I'm Northern. She's like, oh, okay, cool. And then the club started by this point, you know, all this. And I was like, I can't really hear you. I wish we were in a pub, you know, where we could chat. She's like, me too. And I was like, oh, do you want to go tomorrow? Let's go for a Sunday roast tomorrow. And she's like, okay, yeah. Got a number.
That's so away. Northern. Do you want to go for a roast?
For a Sunday roast, right? Got a number, went away. And I said, oh, how about that roast today? And she was like, oh, I can't. She wouldn't do it.
Why?
She turned me down. Well, I think it's because she was hungover. But I think she was splitting up with her fella as well at the time. Or she wasn't with, but still living. And
Blurred lines.
Anyway, she went traveling. And this was maybe... And I went touring Brazil. And this was like 10 or 11 months later. Yeah, I gave up on her. I was like, right, okay, she doesn't want to, you know... So 10, 11 months later, I got back from Brazil and she texted me saying, how about that Sunday roast or how about that drink?
Did she?
So I was like, I'll cancel those two dates I had for that evening. Yeah, I'll cancel those two.
You had two dates lined up in one night.
No, I did. I had two dates in 1 week or something going on.
That's still quite punchy.
I know, it's quite good that, isn't it? They didn't come along that often. It was like, oh, I've got to make the most of this week because I've got a week off. You know, I'll get two in. But everything.
So as soon as she got in touch, those other opportunities paled into insignificance.
Absolutely, yeah. I was obsessed. Like, you know, I just went for it. And when we tell everyone, it took us a year to get together. They're like, how? But in a way, it was like one of the best years ever because I got to be single for a year because I'd just come out of a relationship. You know, it was meant to be, you know. I felt like I was ready for a relationship then. And I remember Noel Gallagher talking on radio and he's like, man, he's like, let yourself fall in love, man. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, okay. Is that what we do? You know,
if Noel said it's all right, then I'll do it.
Noel said he's all right for me to fall in love. Yeah, I remember him saying something like that. Like, we have these barriers as men. Just like, it's amazing, you know. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
It's so where songs come from, isn't it?
I went for it.
From the falling in love.
Yeah. I went for it. We've been married, just celebrated our eighth year married. Eighth anniversary.
Little boy,
Cooper, yeah. 4.5 years old.
How's that going?
Amazing. Yeah, he's at a good age now.
It's a great age.
I'm not going to lie, we found it difficult. We thought we'd be that family that would be in the middle of nowhere with loads of kids and a dog, but we're the opposite. We're like, I think one's enough for us at the minute, but
yeah,
it's really, like, he's at an age now where I'm like, I'm laughing at him and we have the best time. We had a bike ride yesterday and he just had the best time.
Oh.
And you know, he's like my little mate now. So.
Oh, it's joyous. Honestly, yeah. Danny, if I could go back and have a day with my son at the age of 4 again, I'd probably give you one of my arms for it. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I like how Destin has played its hand for you. It's kind of given you your two great loves, right? Your wife and McFly.
Yeah, I suppose it's been good to me, hasn't it? Yeah, it's been good. And that's kind of like the way I think about stuff now. I'm just like... If I can't control it, why worry about it? And if it sounds like fun, let's do it. You know, because I had a massive bout of anxiety when I was 19, when my dad left and that. And then
that's a weird age, isn't it? Right, because you're an adult, except you're really not. With hindsight, you're not an adult.
Yeah, I'm always a kid, aren't I? I'm always a kid to my dad. I'm always a kid to my mum, you know.
And yeah, even if you were in your 30s and your mum and dad split up, you'd still feel it in a way that... You probably, yeah, there is a childlike response to that.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel sorry for any kid out there that mum and dad have split up, and I just hope that the mum and dad have got a good, you know, adult, you know, their responsibility, you know, is they chose to have the kids. So they've got to be adult about it and stay in touch and that. And it's hard. It's hard for a kid because you crave that and you miss it. But I feel like I've become way more of a man than I'd ever be, you know, before, because I've learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
I've achieved so much, and it's made me hungrier, and I'm not scared of stuff, you know. But I've become stronger.
Well, because it does feel like the sort of the rug has been pulled from underneath you when you think of your mum and dad as being ever thus, and then they're not.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And then, do you have a good relationship with your dad?
I did do. I mean, I'm not really since I was 19, no. Which is a shame, because, you know, we were good pals, but, you know, when I see my mum in so much pain, and
yeah, that's hard.
You know, it was hard, and he just I wish I knew what I knew now, to just, you know, have a chat with him at the time. But I was a peacemaker. I was an absolute peacemaker. I was scared of emotion. You know, I was scared of talking real talk. And because I wanted everything to be perfect. You know, if they argued, I was like, no, quiet.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. And I think what I try and teach my son now is that emotions are okay. You know, show me your emotion. I want to feel it. I want you to talk to me, because that's the best way of solving anything. You know, and I'm still learning to this day. Like, I'm still bad at talking. I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel today. I don't quite understand my emotion. It's hard. But just knowing that that's okay, that's a part of it. That's a part of it.
That it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like on Father's Day, I'm angry. But then that's getting in the way of me having
a good day,
a good time with my family and my son.
But you are allowed to have all of those emotions sitting alongside each other, because they're real and they're your lived experience.
Of course, of course. There's sadness, there's anger, yeah. But it doesn't matter, because I've got what I have now, and I've got to appreciate what I have now. I can't control what I don't have.
And actually, if you've learned anything from it, it's the kind of father you don't want to be.
Exactly, yeah. Even though, you know, I idolised him. You know, I idolised him. And my mum. They're my first people I look up to, aren't they?
That's us. I think
that's why grandparents are like, you spend less time with them and you see them and you're like, oh my God, that's like their mum and dad's like first, you know. So, you know, it's that thing of like, I think stability is massive for any of us and as kids. And once that stability goes and you don't have that like home that's like the same, I think I was very quick to get my stability. And my stability was Georgia. My stability was my house. It could be anything for you. It could be a job. It could be whatever. But
I think
anyone who's feeling a little lost in the world, I think just finding your base, finding stability. I think that's why people go traveling, to just find the stability in themselves, to find themselves. I don't know. But for me personally, my sanctuary is my home. I love it. And my family.
It's where you drop your anchor, right?
Exactly. So, you know, having that, and you build from that, and then you go step by step. There's a guy on Instagram, and he's got this amazing, I'll have to find his name, but he was homeless on the streets, you know, taking all sorts of drugs. He's done this book, and now he's got this company called Sun Life Organics, and he's an amazing success. And his Instagram is, this is why I think like there's a real positive to like the internet, even though there's a lot of terrible stuff.
Oh, God,
there's a real positive, and I try and find that stuff. But he goes, 1% better every day. That's all we need to be. You know, we're not talking about 100%.
Yeah. It goes right back to what you were saying, right? Understand your maths.
Hey, there we go. There's some maths for your kids. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Everyone expects, like, your best is good enough.
Yeah.
That's what I always find, like, for me, I had high expectations of myself all the time.
But that's why.
Too high.
Yeah, but that's how you are so driven, and you don't do 20 years at the top of your game without being driven.
Yes, but it does get in the way. It does get in the way sometimes.
It really does. I understand.
Because then the brain takes over. Especially at like somewhere like Soccer Aid, you know, and you're going, oh my God, I dreamt of this as a kid. I've got to be amazing. I've got to score an absolute worldie overhead kick. You're not going to do that, mate. Just get the ball and pass it.
Be a team player.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be a knob.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm there thinking I'm going to do a Ryan Giggs down the wing, take everyone on, and like, mate, come on, there's Yap Stam and, you know, Carvalho. You're not going to get past them.
Have a word with yourself.
Have a word.
Know your place in this pecking order.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to stick with the idea of some real talk and those big conversations with my next question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer.
Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've dived into the MasterChef kitchen and you are losing yourself in the world of food at the moment. And I wanted to talk to you about some seminal meals, not so much about the food that you eat, but the company that you keep and the conversations that have unfolded at some of the most pertinent meals that you've shared across the years. And I was kind of inspired to ask you about this because I sat down and watched the documentary that you guys did at McFly, talking about the difficult years that you'd had. And Harry said that in Europe, when you were out touring with McBusted, it was time to say, can we do McFly again? And somebody had to take the lead on that conversation. And you had a meal in Europe that I think either Harry or Tom said went on to become the beginning of the unraveling of your friendships. But you had to fall apart to come back together again, didn't you?
I remember this meal. It was one of those meals where you're coming in thinking, we all make our own stories up, right? Unless we have the story in front of us to read, we're all coming to this table with our own version of what's happened.
Yeah.
Or what's going on. So we're obviously coming in with these stories and we're like... And Harry's really good at, like, I think me, Tom and Dougie are not as great. I think we've got better, but at the time... We weren't great at confrontation, or we were scared of hurting each other because we were such good friends. Mm. And I feel like that's with any friends, it's hard to tell somebody the truth. It's hard because, and there's a way to tell it.
There is, and ultimately, what you were trying to do was protect something that was precious to you all, right?
Exactly. Not only a friendship, but a whole, you know, career,
business,
and a band, and a business. And I always say that, like, there's a couple of relationships, like. I wish I could say, before I say something to you, this is on a professional level. I don't mean this as a friend. Right? You know, I wish I could say that. Just to sign the consent form before I do it. There you go.
Again, it's blurred lines again, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think we've learned that massively. But I remember at the end of the meal, yeah, because Harry's really good. I was just going back to Harry's point. He's really good at kind of getting up the elephant in the room, you know, and going, lads, are we... What do we feel about this band? Do we want to do it? Let's just get a question.
So he was leading with all the tough questions,
right? Absolutely, yeah. And he's fair play to him, you know.
And symbolically, you'd ordered nachos, which is a sharing dish.
Yeah.
And apparently,
yeah,
there were four nachos left at the end of it, right? And you ate your nacho. Tom ate his. Harry ate his. But the big break in all of this was that Dougie had enough. He needed to step away for a while and he wouldn't eat the nacho. And you were all sat there silently thinking,
eat the nacho!
Bloody nacho! The nacho's the band. Are you in the band or you're out the band?
Suddenly the nachos became the symbolic, like, you know, like this thing of like, this is his yes or no, guys. This is him saying
yes
or no.
Were you all thinking that without saying it, though?
Weirdly, yeah, because we're all looking going... It was one of those moments that you just couldn't explain. You can't explain it. Doug, you'd been through such a tough time, and like, as close as he was to me, I didn't understand what he was going through.
Because you've never struggled with addiction.
No, and I remember like, I remember his pain and him being backstage, and I was like, mate, like I didn't. You know, Harry had to explain it a little bit more to me, and I've learnt a lot from it. But like,
Harry's like the dad, isn't he?
Yeah, Harry's amazing because I feel like he's not scared of it. He's not scared of like, not confrontation, but in a way of like, come on, guys, you know, like it'll be okay if we talk about it, kind of thing. And it's like, oh yeah, okay. So he's almost like not holding our hand through the process, but I feel like he does sometimes. I'm like, Harry, how do you say it without being offensive? Like, okay, you say it. It's like our translator, because I'm very emotional when I was. I'm much better now. I can't react straight away. I have to take a minute, dissect it, come back and go. Because I always go away from an argument, or I always go away from conversation going, why didn't I say that? It all makes sense now. Because in the moment, I get really claustrophobic. I get stuck. I get angry. I get all these emotions overwhelmed that I can't speak any sense.
But what you do is the best thing in the world. You cool on it, you sit with it, you consider it, and then you come back with a considered response. That's much better than just going, assholes.
Yeah, well, that's what I used to do. That I used to walk out and go, get out, yeah, I'm done with this, yeah, whatever. The problem is now, which I'm trying to get better at, is I go away, think about it, and I'm going, oh, I should have said that. Ah, it don't matter. Anyway, what's tomorrow? What's happening tomorrow? And that's when I just forget. I don't want to bring it up again.
Right.
So that's the problem now. But we are better than ever now. I feel like we've just, you know, things need to stop for it to repair. Mm-hmm. Things need to just slow down. If you have an injury as a footballer, you go and get it sorted and you rest. You don't play. And I feel like that's what we needed to do. We just needed to get our feet up and just rest and settle and appreciate each other and appreciate what we had.
But if you'd have sat around and said, that's what we're going to do, three out of four of you would have said, that's not what we want to do right now. So it was forcing you into a situation that none of you were really comfortable with, including Dougie, because he was taking himself off to Los Angeles to kind of have a look at himself. And actually, he went from bad to worse there and really struggled. And that must have been hard to watch a friend go through that.
Yeah, it is. Like, Dougie's the same. Like, his dad left him when he was younger, and he was a little bit different to his family. He was like the kind of like skater kid. And he was very young when he got in the band. Very young. Like, thanks to him, we have the Beatles record for
the youngest band, you know. We talk about Destiny, right? Yeah, because of his age, you got the Beatles record. But his first audition was dreadful. And it was only because you were really struggling to fill that fourth spot that you asked him to come back.
What's mad is Harry and Dougie were number one and two in this queue of the auditions under Universal Music at Covent Garden. Like, they were number one and two.
Were they?
Yes, number one and two. And they were chatting in the queue. And Dougie kept...
Or McFly. This is in response to the ad you placed in the NME.
Well, we weren't McFly yet. We didn't know how many band members we wanted. It was just me and Tom wanting to start a band, who've written a few songs, who've got a deal lined up, ready to go. That's all we knew.
Wow, it's a pretty good position to be in.
Yeah, pretty good position, right? Yeah, so we had all these like amazing musicians turning up, and Dougie was puking in a bin.
With nerves. Like to add. Not because he was like...
No,
rusted.
With nerves, yeah. He was 15 at this point, lied about his age.
He's a baby.
Yeah, so he wasn't really meant to audition either, because we wanted 16 plus, right? So number one and two, and I remember him coming in, and I was like, mate, where... He had like... I couldn't see. He had this fringe. I was like, where are your eyes under there, mate? You know, and he comes in, he's like, all right, mate. You all right, mate? I was like, oh, where are you from? He's like, Basildon, mate. I was like, okay, cool. And he was like a bit sketchy, and he was like, yeah, should I play the bass? Yeah, okay, cool. And he just stood there, and I remember he had Dickies, you know, skater shorts. He looked like he'd just come out of Blink-182, basically. You know, he's like Mark Hoppus. And he stood there, and he just went straight his face. Like, didn't even smile, looked nervous, couldn't see his eyes, and he just went dun 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 dun. And it's one of those moments where me and Tom looked around and was like, when's he gonna stop? When does this stop? It's just a loop.
It's been on for ages, didn't
it? Dun 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 dun. It's like one of those moments in South Park where you're like, okay.
So what made you want to see him again? Because, the impression was not good as a first impression.
So what happened was he emailed going, oh, I'm so sorry, I was so nervous. Please can I come again, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I managed to like, look, He's like, I like this kid. You know, he looks good. He plays well. I think we should give him a second shot. You know, and we're like, okay, yeah. I mean, I like the dude. He looked cool. He looked like he fits in our band, you know. And we want that kind of like skater rock vibe, you know. And so we gave him a second chance. But by this time, we hadn't found a bass player. So we went through all the auditions. So he came. He literally skipped the queue and just came straight to the last four. I think he sent us a video of him on YouTube to give us another chance, you know, whatever. And we're like, yeah, okay, we'll give him a chance. We'll give him a chance. I think me and Tom split up and we had two drummers and two bass players. And we basically lived with them for a while to see who we got friendly with. And obviously we fell in love with Dougie and we fell in love with Harry. But I remember this so well. I was like, oh, so Doug, man, I'm like, what? You know, trying to get a conversation out of me. What star sign are you? And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? At this point, I didn't know. He's lying about his age.
Oh.
So he couldn't answer. I said to Tom, mate, isn't it weird to know his star sign? You don't know when he was born. I was like so weirded out by it. But yeah, I realised later that he was lying about his age to do the audition, yeah.
That's fantastic. But he did you a favour because without that, you would never have taken that record from the Beatles.
There we go. Exactly, yeah. Just go with it. I didn't ask too many questions. Like, cool. He doesn't know his birthday. Anyway, what do you want to do today? You know, it's one of them moments, yeah.
When we talk about seminal conversations over dinner, are there any others that stand out to you? Those, it could be your wedding breakfast. It could be those awkward moments when you're trying to keep the peace at home with a warring mum and dad.
The most bizarre dinner I've ever had, but incredible at the same time, was we were recording over in Atlanta with Dallas Austin.
Dallas Austin, wow.
Yeah.
Just explain who Dallas Austin is, right?
Well, yeah. Dallas Austin is one of the most legendary producers of all time. He's known for
TLC,
Pink.
Sugar Babes.
Pink, he told me an amazing story about Pink. She slept and begged him. She slept outside his studio for like 3 days straight and begged him to produce her album.
Wow.
And he ended up doing it. And that was her first album.
Yeah.
Yeah, so amazing, amazing stuff. And we were trying to get on radio at the time, play the radio game, and be like, how do we get on radio? Because at the minute, there's not one guitar on radio, you know. So we're trying to be clever about it. Anyway, cut a long story short, we had the most amazing experience. Like,
so you're in Atlanta at Dallas's studios or his house?
At his studio.
Right, which is like, I would imagine, bougie.
Incredible. Just like the most awesome place to hang out, you know. Incredible paintings, discs everywhere, like so inspiring. And literally in the first couple of days of meeting him, and I always remember his laugh. He's got his laugh like this. And he starts laughing. I'm like, Dallas, what are you laughing at, man? Like, he's on his phone laughing. And I'm like, Dallas, what are you laughing at, man? Like, and he found us hilarious, especially my accent.
Yeah.
Laughed at me straight away. And he goes, you want to go to dinner with Elton John? And I went, what? He went, yeah, Elton John wants to go to dinner. Do you want to go to dinner? And we're like, yeah, yeah, when? He's like, now. We're like, mate, we're just about to like write a song and record. He's like, yeah, but we're going to have a dinner with Elton John. All right, cool. So we went to this place, met Elton John, had dinner. And it was this amazing steak I had, blah, blah, blah. And we got talking. And it's a very quick dinner. But what was amazing, so he goes, oh, McFly, yeah, yeah, I know you guys, you're doing great things. And at the time, Lady Gaga was becoming big, and I remember talking to him about Lady Gaga. And then he goes to us, do you want to come over to mine on Friday, I think it was, or Saturday, and have dinner? And we were like, yeah, okay.
He's got a big place in Atlanta,
This is Elton John, yeah. So we were like, yeah, okay. So me and the boys like, mate, we just got invited to Elton John's apartment in Atlanta for dinner. What the? You know what I mean? We got like 2 days. We're like, right, what are you going to wear? What are you going to wear? What are we doing? You know what I mean? All this stuff. We were so nervous. Honestly, so nervous. It's one of those dinners where, you know, like you're just necking wine because you don't know what to do. So we go there, we turn up and we go get up to Elton John's apartment and he answers the door in his most unbelievable Adidas tracksuit, like full on matching. And he just takes us for a tour instantly. Takes us for a tour around his apartment and all of his collections and his artwork is incredible. It's like a museum. It's incredible. And then we sit down to this, you know, unbelievable, like round, white, awesome Michelin star style kind of table. And there's waiters and a chef and that, and we're drinking wine, we're chatting music. There's people that I've never met before in my life that are multi-award winning songwriters and business owners and all this, and I'm just having the best time ever. So when you mix that energy with food and music, and that experience of like, but there's Elton John and I'm eating, it's just, it's mad. Like, music can take you to some mad places, and that's one of the, you know, places where I was like, this
but
is
you've
crazy.
Got all the ingredients for the perfect night there, right?
Yeah.
So it's about food almost being just kind of a part and parcel of the experience, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, like, I was always a fussy eater as a kid. And I think, like, travelling and moments like that where I'm just pressured into trying something. Like, I'm not going to say, no, I don't like, I don't know, the starter of prawns or whatever at Elton John. I'm just going to eat it. Because you just do.
Of course you do.
I don't want him to go, oh, you don't like him? Okay, you're not coming again. You know what I mean? Get out if you don't like prawns, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, I'll just have it. I'll just eat it. And suddenly I'm like, whoa, what are these? The most amazing prawns I've ever had. Yeah, garlic prawns. Come
bringing
on.
Your mum. Mum, I've had prawns.
Yeah, mum, I've had prawns. Never had pizza until I went down to London. No. How mad is that?
And now look at you, MasterChef.
I mean, I've learned a lot, yeah.
Have you? Obviously, yeah. We can't say how you did.
No.
But we were talking before we started recording about, you were like, how many chefs you had on the podcast? I can see you're having like a fan moment with food, aren't you?
And yeah.
The people that kind of sit at the top of the pile in terms of the chef world.
Okay, so yeah. So the reason I did this show is because I was a fan of it. And for the first time in a long time, I had the time to do it. There's a couple of things here that why food is massive for me. First of all, cooking now, just mindfulness. Like, I love it. It's the only thing. It's why I love my football. It's why I love my golf. It's why I love music. Those three things for me is the only time I ever concentrate on just doing that thing.
Yeah, just doing one thing.
Just doing that thing. Don't get over. And I like the preparation. Mm. And I like the, you know, I enjoy it. And I enjoy attaching the smells to an experience, to a bit of music, a bit of wine. I love that. Like, for me, it's like, I don't know, it just fills you with happiness.
Yeah, it's joyous.
Yeah, it's absolutely joyous. And I like the reaction when you cook for somebody, you know. And I've always wanted to be good at cooking, you know. And I was a massive fan of MasterChef. I used to watch it all the time. Even the Australian one now I watch, you know, I love it. Yeah, absolutely love it.
So when you walk onto the set on the first day and Greg and John are there, what were you like?
Oh, honestly, well, In the advert, there's a clip of me going, just so you know, mate, I love you too. And then Faye's going, all right, stop trying to get brownie points. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, genuinely. I'm like, I'm a fan. Come on.
You were quite impressed when I said that we've had both of them on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're a fan of someone, it's so good to meet the person or meet the people and be in the room. It's quite an overwhelming experience. But I can only describe it as like when I produce music, the best thing that you could, when producing any music, nothing's going to replace your ears. Nothing's going to try and like recreate what you can hear. And learning your ears is mastering production. And I feel like it's the same with your palate, with food.
Yeah.
Like your palate is personal to you. And when you understand it and you learn about it and why heat does what heat does and why acids do what acids do and why what the fat's there for, you know, and the flavors
you've
that
deconstructed it. Yeah. Loving and like, the deconstruction
and learning that, like, put it this way, I never used to have chili on anything before MasterChef, and now I have it on pretty much everything,
even on your like, prawns.
Even on my prawns. I stuck it in a burger the other day, you know what I mean? So for me, like, it's just cooking for friends at the minute is really joyous because I can cook for them now. And
you know what you're doing.
I know what I'm doing, yeah.
You're a master.
Not yet, but kind of.
Well, are you? I don't know. You're Master Chef. That's what your granddad said.
I suppose I've been on Master Chef, so I could be, you know.
Getting closer to the Okay, you ready for your last question?
Yes.
My goodness, can you believe that you guys are almost heading towards sort of 20 years of filling fields and audiences all over the world?
I know.
You came out of the traps hard and fast, straight in at number one. There's beautiful footage that I saw online of you all celebrating your first number one. You look like you literally just got your A-level results. You're 18 with your first debut number one album. At 19, you won your first Brit. I mean, those first years were intense and crazy. And yet here you are having this sort of second act via an interlude with Muck Busted. And I wanted to talk about second acts, really, or looking back at some of those early days and thinking about the moments that you'd like to go back and revisit with a little bit of age and wisdom under your belt, so you could reappreciate them or re-experience them with a different lens. What would those moments be? Because, I mean, for example, like when you look at Glastonbury, you waited 19 years to play Glastonbury. Do you think you could have experienced it in the same way 19 years ago? Probably not.
No, you're right. Absolutely not. I don't think we appreciate being number one for 2 weeks or what it meant. I just think...
I know, if you were number one for 2 weeks now, I mean, literally... Mate,
I'd be wearing a T-shirt outside. You know, I'd have one of them signs above going, yeah, that's me, who's number one for 2 weeks. Just nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's
like,
me!
Yeah, it's me. Like, you don't appreciate it. And it, actually, it's not that we didn't appreciate it. I actually think we didn't understand it.
No.
All we wanted to do was go home and hang out as a band and eat pizza and play Project Gotham.
You all lived in a house together at the time.
Yeah.
Project Gotham.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and the only reason why I went home is because Dougie was too young to go out drinking, so we just drank at home and had parties. But, like, we just wanted to be in a band and be like, yeah.
I mean,
and
those moments, that first number one, to experience that now as a 36-year-old man with all this experience behind you, how different would it be?
Massively different. You know, I think COVID was... You know, taught us a lot as well. When you have something that's taken away from you,
yeah,
you realize, oh, okay,
freedom.
Okay, yeah, like this is. I didn't know I loved it this much, and travel.
When you take, I mean, you guys traveled. You've been all over the world. I didn't think I would ever see as much of the world as I have, coming from where I'm from. People didn't travel like this. It teaches you so much, and then when that's taken away from you. I mean,
absolutely.
And also, I think when you travel at 19, 20, you're not drinking it in the same way that you do now.
No, but you, but in a way, it has. Travel had a massive, massive impact on me. Mm. Massive. Never forget when I was in New Orleans. Actually, no, I was in Africa first doing Comic Relief, and we released All About You and got a school built or whatever in Uganda for these kids.
I remember that.
Meeting them all, and it was.
I'm in the video for All About You.
Yeah,
yeah. And I went to Uganda as well that year.
Did you really?
Yeah.
And it was the most.
Yeah.
Grounding, unbelievable. As you know, as a 19, 20-year-old, like, had so much impact on me.
Mm.
From there, we went to New Orleans and filmed in Hollywood, with you know Lindsay Lohan. And while all this is happening, I get a call from my sister saying Dad's gone. So in a way. That Africa trip was like, ah, it made me so much stronger and realized like this ain't a big deal. Like it shouldn't be a big deal. Like my dad's going, okay, that's fine, because I've just seen kids that are starving in Africa and kids that have no mum and dads and kids that are looking after their kids because of, you know, whatever's gone on. And I think that just things like that where it just, okay, I've seen it now, I've witnessed it, I'll take that with me and it makes me stronger. And just doing what we did for those kids, a little bit of help.
I remember the impact it had on you, actually, because we all recorded the video in one day. We were lots of tips. I mean, I filmed my parts with Graham Norton.
Yeah.
And what's the name of the studios? Is it Air
Studios? Air Studios,
wasn't it?
Yeah. So we Ruby Wax was there, do you remember?
Yeah, Ruby Wax. I was really scared of her. She just sort of growled at me. I was like, yes, whatever you say. Yeah. But I'd been to Uganda and you'd been to Uganda. Mm-hmm. And I think you had to go there to see on the ground the work that was being done.
Mm-hmm. And then when you realize that, and then obviously just traveling anywhere in the world, like on a food level, like that's how I got into food.
Yeah.
Traveling, going to Japan, trying teppanyaki, trying the sushi, trying all of that.
Ah, amazing.
Experiencing it all.
It's an education, isn't it?
It is. And that's where you have that attachment of a memory to a bit of food. And every time you revisit that food, you have that happy memory attached to it. And I think that's important for a lot of people. Like, one for me especially, like I still do that to this day. Like I will attach a smell to a good memory because I feel like if you're having a bad day or whatever, or just even not just a normal day, you smell that smell. Like today I'm wearing the scent where I got married in.
Aww.
I've not worn it for a while. I thought, oh, I'll have a bit of that and just, yeah, there we go.
Aww.
It just makes you, it's just a nice little thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like food and wine and those small things we probably take for granted sometimes are big for me.
If you had to go back and evoke memories of, for example, Glastonbury, which I know is still very much fresh in your mind, where I think, you know, when they put you on, it was you were on the Avalon stage.
I don't know. We're on a small stage.
Yeah.
Like for Glastonbury.
The organisers had, I think, maybe underestimated your pull because they had to close the field. That doesn't happen normally.
I know.
I mean, the pictures are amazing. So when you know, what are the senses? The senses of smell, taste, experience that will take you back to that gig? Because that must have been a bit of a milestone minute for you.
Yeah, where do I start? I took my son and I took my wife. I had to, even if it was just for me. Just to say that they were there the first time I played Glastonbury. We got there about 3 hours before. Just had a little walk around. And then these girls came up to us and was like, oh my God, you guys are playing later on. We're on this, we're doing the best raps in Glastonbury. Do you want one? I was like, yeah, well, I'll have one. Yeah, okay, cool. About 45, 50 minutes later, it was on the other side of the field. These girls went all the way to the other side of the field and got us these raps. These duck wraps were the most incredible wraps I have ever had.
Really?
I was like, this is amazing. The sun was shining. Suddenly, I don't feel like so nervous anymore. Like, this is amazing. My son's running round. Come on, Glastonbury.
Wife's there. My wife's field is there. Full.
Yeah, I'm drinking water out of a can. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it felt really good. And then it was just such a nice afternoon because I've never been and I didn't understand what it was like to go to Glastonbury, and I get the feeling of it now, and like everyone's really chilled and got ready for the show and still a little bit nervous of like who's going to turn up, because as soon as anybody, we believe in ourselves so much. Like, I feel like we are one of the best live bands that we could ever be. Or if nobody's seen us live, they need to come to understand it. They need to. It's like Springsteen. If you don't get Springsteen, go and see him live and you'll get it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying we're as good as Springsteen, but.
No, you need to get. I've seen you guys live. You are energy.
Go for it, right?
You're next level.
Yeah. So Green Day are, you know, a massive inspiration for us as a band. Like, that's our common ground. Like, Green Day, like the way they play, the musicianship involved, but the performance. Because it's hard to run around and play quality. Like, play at the same, you know, try and.
Yeah, not let it be to the detriment.
Exactly.
Of music.
Exactly. Yeah. You can ask any guitarist to jump up and down and try and play, you know, a guitar really well, and it's really difficult. So we've mastered that. There you go. And so, but still, as soon as like a promoter goes, oh, you know, I think you should play the small set. I don't know what it's going to be like. You go, suddenly you're back to like, where you know, the beginning. You're like, okay, is it, you know, we need to, you know, let's prep ourselves. Let's get in the right frame of mind. What you're wearing. Let's get our clothes right. I want to feel good. You know, I don't want to be too like sweaty up there.
Did you overthink Glastonbury, do you think, in advance?
Yes.
Of it?
Well, not normally I would have, but as an older man now who's been through a lot of overthinking, I can slow it down. I'd rather it be the way it was, because if we'd have played a massive stage and no one turned up, it would have been bad. But the way it happened was absolutely perfect.
Well, I only was aware of it because of people that I follow on social media. I didn't go to Glastonbury this year, but it was all over my timeline. And I just thought, oh, do you know what? It couldn't happen to four nicer guys, really. I loved that there was such a buzz and that you had over-delivered on every level. that you found new audience, I think, that day. People that were like, yeah, bloody love McFly.
Yeah, I think we've been craving that a long time. I feel like we fit in a slot that's a real difficult slot of like pop, but we function like Iron Maiden. We have techs, we have guitar amps, we are sweaty on stage, we give it everything. You know, it's the two extremes, but we still want to get on radio. We still want to be commercial, you know, and that's like, we're surrounded by all of that. And
yeah, but you are, you do it.
You know, and we're right in the middle of that. And, you know, I think we're at the age now though, where, you know, I'm seeing kids on parents' shoulders and I'm seeing boyfriends come with their girlfriends.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a dude came to a signing like a couple of years ago with a Metallica t-shirt on. Like, what's that about? I said, what, you like that? We like Metallica. Like, we get influenced. You'd never believe it. One of our songs, this album, is influenced by Metallica. Like, you get it, bro. Yeah, you get it. I know we pop, but you get it. You know, so it's like, the more people that see us, the more time we're around, you know, people are getting it. I feel like we're peaking again. I really do. I feel like we're loving it more than ever. You know, we're giving it more than ever. We understand what we are.
Second act moment.
Yeah. We understand who we are as individuals. I think that's massive, because then you bring your best to what your band is, and we understand what the band is now.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, we had a board like this on the
album. You value it more as well, don't you?
Absolutely value it more. We appreciate it more.
Yeah, go on. What was on your whiteboard?
So we had a whiteboard like this, and it's one of the best things we ever did. What is McFly? This is the board of identity.
Nice.
And we had on it, you know, energy, fun, honest, but not too serious. Blah, blah, blah. All these things that summed up the personality of McFly. And we all looked at it and we were like, oh, I get it now.
It's your ingredients board.
I get it. Exactly. It was the ingredients to it. And so, I don't know why we've never done that before. But we're like, oh, I get it now. The fact that we're still relevant, the fact that we're still making music, the fact that I'm still in a band, the fact that I get to do what I love every day still, and then manage to fit in MasterChef and The Voice Kids and all this. Like, yeah, I'm super proud of that. Absolutely. Like,
you should be super proud of everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to be sat here at 36, I'm so lucky. Yeah, I'm very lucky.
With all of that under your belt, but so much more in front of you, because you guys are smart, you're clever. I mean, one of the smartest things I think I heard you say was you all went for group therapy. You learned to communicate with each other.
Yeah, communication is key in any relationship. Because being in a band is just like any relationship, you know.
It's like a weird marriage.
It is.
No sex. I mean, I say that. I hope not.
You never know.
But all of the other complexities apply.
Yeah, sexless marriage, that's what it is.
It's a sexless marriage. You can go back, put that on your whiteboard. Yeah, that, sexless marriage.
That'll go right at the top.
It's a great name for a spin-off band.
Yeah, if that pops up on Spotify anytime soon, you know who it is.
Exactly. Oh, Danny, thank you so much. I have a feeling that you will be in the MasterChef kitchen for a few weeks to come.
Oh, thank you.
I can't imagine that you're going to be one of the first out. Don't forget, you can catch Danny from the 10th of August on BBC One and on BBC iPlayer. And if you've enjoyed our chat about food, we've got plenty of chefs in the back catalogue. We've got Tom Kerridge, who we've talked about. Greg Wallace is in there. Lisa Faulkner, John Turode, James Martin, Simon Rimmer, and if music's more your thing, Gary Barlow's there alongside Hanson, Bananarama, All Saints, James Morrison, Charlene Spiteri, Lisa Stansfield, and so many more. I mean, that's quite a back catalogue, isn't it?
That's a great list.
I know.
Lisa Stansfield.
I know. Wow. I know.
What a ledge.
She is such a ledge. It's a great episode, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. You can download it wherever you get your podcast,
yeah.
Danny.
That's amazing. I love a podcast. That's amazing. Yeah.
My thanks to you, as always, for your company, and to Ben Robbins and the Yahoo Studios team who produced the show with me. Editing is by Andy Agson, and our music comes courtesy of, guess who's done the music for this podcast, Danny?
Go on, I can't. Go on.
Andy Bell.
Oh, yes. The drummer of Razorlight.
No.
No!
Oasis! Andy Bell from Oasis.
Oh my God, why did I get that? Why did I say Razor Light?
He's had to leave the stage
what
in shame.
What a blonker. Of course I knew that. That's made my palms sweat. I can't believe I didn't know that.
I thought you were going to go, what, from Erasure?
Oh my God, I've seen Avanti from Erasure, yeah. Oh my God.
That's made my palms sweat.
But, oh my God, that's made my palms sweat.
That's the best ending to a show ever.
I can't believe that.
Oh.
That's sick.
I know.
That's sick.
I know. That's my mic drop moment. Out of here.
Mic drop moment.
See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.